So the date was May 18th, 2005. My stepfather and I had just finished playing a round of golf together, which is something that we've always enjoyed together. And we were driving home. And I remember the date because it was 3 days before I got married. I had graduated college a week before and was about to get married. And my stepfather looked at me and he got very serious on the way home from golf. And he looked at me and goes, "I got two questions for you. One, do you know what lubricant is? Two, do you have any questions for me about sex?" And I was kind of stunned. And I said, "I want to answer these in the right order. Yes and no." And he said, "Good. Tell your mother we talked about sex." And I said, "Okay, I got it." My stepdad had some marching orders that day from mom. And we look back on that story now and we smile and we laugh a little bit. But the thing that I took away from that was it's never too late to start talking to your kids about sex, right? They waited until 3 days before I got married. I was like, "Thanks, guys. Appreciate it." My name's Ben Cash, and what we're going to talk about this morning is conversations with your kids about sex. And so we'll talk about that in theory at first, and then we'll get practical as well towards the end. That's a little picture of my family. We have three kiddos, 6, 4, and 1. That's at our one-year-old's birthday 2 weeks ago. And my background is I currently work at the Center for Collaborative Care, where we do — it's a longer topic for another day, but we do all kinds of work within health and human services. But my career before that was as a licensed counselor at Oaks Counseling, where I worked primarily with family relationships. So I worked with parent-child relationships. I did marital therapy, saw a lot of high school, junior high boys, college boys with issues around the topic of sexuality. And so that's where a lot of my experience comes from, is 8 years and 6,000 hours of counseling, mostly around these topics. My family's a Fellowship Fayetteville family. It's really fun to come back to the Rogers campus. We came up here for 8 years before we were blessed with the Fayetteville campus and now go down there. So it's fun to come back up here. And I grew up in a home that almost never talked about sex. Literally, 3 days before I got married, that was the most intense sexual conversation I had ever had with my mom or my stepdad. My stepdad had been in my life since I was 2 years old. But I grew up in a home that almost never — the rare occasions that we did talk about sex was when my sisters or I were in trouble for something that we had done or gotten caught doing, and then the conversation came to the surface. We're going to do one teeny easy experiential thing real quick, because I am a counselor in heart, so I apologize for that, but it's very important to our conversation today. For us to have a conversation about how do we talk to our kids about sex, we've got to understand where we came from. So I just want you to find at least one person in this room that you can talk to for 5 minutes and just tell them, in the home that I grew up in, this is what the conversations about sex were like. They didn't exist. My dad made it really dirty sounding and ugly. My parents were awkwardly sexual in the way that they talked and acted with each other. Whatever it was like, explain to the person with you and take a minute to collect that data for yourself on what the conversations about sex were like in the home that you grew up in. Okay? We'll take about 5 minutes. Do that real quick. I see a couple of folks that are here on their own. Find somebody to chat with while you do this real quick. Go ahead. All right, we'll kind of bring the room back together here. Thanks for doing that. It's always fun to see two people having this conversation that look like they've walked in together, and you see the eyes get big. Like, "I didn't know that about you." So hopefully you've learned something. This is great. Thanks for taking a second and going through that with somebody near you. I'm going to read real quick from Song of Songs. "How beautiful you are, and how pleasing my love with your delights. Your stature is like that of a palm, and your breasts like clusters of fruit. I said, I will climb the palm tree. I will take hold of its fruit. May your breasts be like clusters of grapes on the vine, the fragrance of your breath like apples, and your mouth like the best wine. May the wine go straight to my beloved, flowing gently over lips and teeth. I belong to my beloved, and his desire is for me. Come, my beloved, let us go to the countryside, and let us spend the night in the villages. Let us go early in the vineyards to see if the vines have budded, if their blossoms have opened, and if the pomegranates are in bloom. There I will give you my love. If I would have read that out loud as a high schooler with no explanation, my mother would have grounded me for 2 weeks for talking about breasts and for talking about climbing the palm tree, which is a little suggestive. The reason that I read that is, I'm sorry, you guys, I'm a therapist. It's what we do. We swim in the content, right? Sex is God's story. He made it. He invented it. He created it. He dreamed it up. He wanted it, and he gave it to us, and it's his. He owns it. And we forget this as a Christian culture because secular society has largely stolen that, right? And as a Christian culture, we're very culpable for this because we've stopped talking about it because we're uncomfortable because of hard things in our lives. But it's God's story, and we have to, when we think about having a conversation with our kids, we have to start there, that God owns it. Sex is his. He made it. We're going to talk this morning about conversations about sex with our kids, and we've got to face the reality to start off that our kids are around conversations about sex every single day. The only question is, are we a part of any of them? They will be having these or next to these every single day. Will we be a part of them? If you are like most of us in this world and moving yourself towards these hard conversations with your kiddos, I'd encourage you from the beginning with your children to be honest and overt about how awkward and uncomfortable it has. That can have a very regulating effect on you, and it can have a very regulating effect on your kiddos too. To sit down and go, hey, this is going to be weird for a minute. I'm sorry. when we sat down our 6 and 4 year old a year and a half ago to have a conversation, we call it the bathing suit conversation about nobody touches you where your bathing suit covers up except for mama, daddy, and the doctor. When I sat him down to do that, I was like, I'm going to be honest with you guys. This is going to be kind of weird, but we're going to have a conversation about this for a minute. It can be very helpful. But one of the big ideas that we've got to grab a hold of is that we've got to paint a picture across a lifetime for our kiddos about sex. The problem is with many of the conversations, especially for the junior high and high school audience, is that a vast majority of these conversations we have are about negative things. They're reactive after something bad has happened. And so it's about a very finite piece of time in their life that we're having the discussion. Instead, we need to paint a picture across a lifetime. We need to cast vision for our kiddos that God has big plans for their sexuality. Now, maybe that's going to be as a single person. Maybe that's going to be as a married person. But we need to cast vision and paint a picture for them, especially if they're in junior high and high school, that God made sex, and within the right context, it is a really good thing. It creates incredible emotional bonding. It creates incredible physical connection. It is the part of procreation. It is a good thing that he wants and has for you to enjoy. And we've got to begin to cast vision for that for our kids so that their only vision for sex isn't, it's a bad, shameful thing that either I like and want to do all the time or I don't like and I don't ever want to do. Because that's where most kids end up. So we've got to paint a picture across a lifetime for our kids. It's also really powerful to share a piece of your sexual story with your kids, especially these high schoolers, to find a slice of your own story, an age-appropriate piece, not full disclosure, but an age-appropriate piece of your story that you can share with them. I love it when a dad comes up to me and he says, you know what, I just told my kid that I struggled with pornography in college. I'm like, that is fantastic. Share a piece of your story. It makes you a human being. It makes you more vulnerable, which invites them to be more vulnerable. So think through, is there a piece of your story that you can share with your kiddos? The goal is, the overarching goal is, to use conversations to write God's story about sex on the hearts of our kids. We want them to have real vision for what sex really is. That it's God set up, it's God created, God ordained. Shame is the absolute antithesis of God's story about sex. Shame is the enemy of this situation that we're dealing with here in the sexual culture. Satan is actively using shame to keep believers from talking about sex, and it is a wildly effective strategy. He is largely sidelining us from being a part of these conversations by using shame in our own lives. Shame can come from lots of places. Shame can come from our own sexual history, right? It can come from our own sexual sin. It can come from recovery from infidelity. It can come from pornography addictions. It can come from somebody else's sin that was targeted at us at some point in our life. Shame can come from lots of places, but Satan is actively and effectively using it to sideline us in these conversations. So as we talk to our kiddos, we have to try to do whatever we can to avoid building shame for them around topics of sexuality. We've got to learn to speak to them in a way that communicates hope and vision for God's story, God's narrative around sex, that isn't shame building for them. Because what shame does is it makes us silent. It makes all sexual things feel wrong. And it builds more and more shame, right? This is the shame trap, the shame cycle that people get stuck in all kinds of unhealthy situations in life. And so we've got to work hard to avoid that. We'll talk about some practical ways to do that in a minute. A lot of times, though, and I added in this bullet point because it's the most common question that I get when I focus on building this healthier narrative about sex and about avoiding shame is, well, yeah, but what about when we catch them looking at pornography? Yeah, well, what about when we catch sexting or when we catch our child in an inappropriate physical relationship with another kid? Consequences are necessary. Absolutely. But two tips. When you get them in this situation, if you use tons of words and tons of emotion, you're probably going to build shame for your kiddo. And so a great consequence tip is low word count, low emotion. You guys, I'm pretty darn good at low word count. But low emotion, I am really, really bad at, right? I can get it down to 15 words, but boy, those words are coming hot, okay? And so we've all got to take a look at who we are as a parent and the way that we engage ourselves and say, hey, which one of these is hard for me? Are they both hard? Is one or the other? And try to bring that down. It's a really effective consequence tip if you try it out. Your children, at the end of the day, are on their own sexual journey. The question is not if you will impact it, but how. Will you impact it from avoidance? Will you impact it from, there's folks who can be harsh with their kids about this, that they can build up, you know, ugly, dirty narratives for kids that aren't helpful. Or can we begin to be a people that say, I'm going to work hard to understand what God set out in sex, and I'm going to work hard to paint that vision and cast that vision for my kiddos. I'm going to tell a quick story here. I asked for Hunter's permission to tell this story, so if it offends you, you can take it up with him, not me. But I think it's important to illustrate the message. There's a guy in Fayetteville that's been a dear friend for a long time, and he's got two kiddos, and the daughter is older, and she's going through some real hard stuff around the topic of sexuality. And so I've been talking to him a lot about that, and somewhere along the way, his son, who is 15, got caught habitually masturbating. And the way that they caught him is mom's expensive lotion kept disappearing quickly. Mom was not very happy about her expensive lotion disappearing quickly. And he said, so I want to tell you what I did, Ben, and I want you to know what you think. I said, okay. He said, I went to Walmart, I bought some Equate lotion and a box of tissues, and I put them on his nightstand. And I said, if you're going to keep masturbating, please don't use your mom's nice lotion. And I want you to know that God has a lot bigger plans for you sexually than sitting in this room alone. I said, I love it. There's no shame in that. And we're casting vision there. And he said, son, we're going to have ongoing conversations about what that is. That is a beautiful answer. He's casting vision for something good, for something big, for something that God wants him to have. And he's working to not give shame to his son, because that's what will keep him stuck in that sin, not the lotion. The shame will. So it's a really cool moment with some really brave parenting that I was really impressed by. Positives and negatives. What I mean by positives and negatives is, around the topic of sexuality and conversations about sex with our kids, most of those conversations are going to either have a positive connotation, casting vision for what God set out, or a negative connotation about sin, about the reality of what's going on in the kid's life right now, about bad things that they need to avoid and watch out for. The problem is there is a wild unbalance in the Christian culture about sex with our kids, the topics of sex with our kids. They're wildly unbalanced to the negative side. And when they are unbalanced in that way, heavy deposits on the negative side is a big part of what contributes to shame building for our kids. In the home that I grew up in, I could count the conversations on one hand, and every one of them had a negative connotation to it. Every one of them was about sin. Don't do that. You're not supposed to do that. That's bad. That's wrong. And so what was my narrative when I was a 21-year-old? Sex is bad and dirty. Now, there's parts of it that physically are enjoyable, but it's bad and dirty because that's all that the conversation was about. I like to paint the picture here. You see the live shots of hurricane evacuations. They've got both lanes of the interstate heading north out of town, right? That's a lot like what the negative connotation is like on these Christian conversations about topics of sex. At the same time, if we can make appropriate deposits of negative or of positive narrative, we can create a God-honoring worldview and desire set for our kids about the topic of sex. Here's what I mean by desire set. This is a really important piece. There's a really great book out there called Wired for Intimacy, How Pornography Hijacks the Male Brain, that a guy, a believer who's a psychiatrist and a whole lot more intelligent than me, wrote, where he talks about how our sexual desire sets change over time. It's a constantly moving target. When a young boy, for example, views pornography, he has a release of serotonin in his head and a release of oxytocin in his body that creates a very natural, very real high. And that if he does that a few times in a row, he can literally begin to train himself to desire pornography more and more and more. And it becomes a chemical high that we want to experience over and over and over again. And so if all of our conversation has this negative connotation, then we're not casting any vision for that desire set to the good of what's to come. There is a really, really disturbing statistic in the academic world right now about the rate at which kids are sexually active in high school and college. It's actually, the rate at which kids are sexually active in high school and college is actually leveling off, which on the surface sounds like good news, right? It's maybe even people are beginning to think starting to decrease a little bit. But the reason is not good. The reason is that males and females in that age group are now training themselves to desire pornography more than they desire sex with another person. Is that scary to anybody else? It's terrifying to me. And so what's happening is kids are viewing pornography, training their brains to enjoy that, and instead of sex with another real human being, now they desire to watch people they don't know on a screen. Now, I'm not advocating for either, but that's a really disturbing trend where desire sets are being shifted and moved over time. It's estimated that 95% of conversations that we have with our kiddos are about sex have a negative connotation to them. I know this statistic really well because I made it up myself when I was making my slides 2 weeks ago. So I don't know what the number is. It's probably higher than that. It's probably 97, 98%, right? And so I'm not trying to suggest that we should shift that on its heels, and that 95% of the conversations you have with your kids should be casting vision towards God's healthy, beautiful picture of sex for them in the future. But what if we could get that to 25% of the conversation? What if 1/4 of the conversation we had with our kiddos about sex was, sex can be really good for you. It can be healthy. It can help you be connected to a spouse in the future if you get married. It can be a way that you demonstrate intense emotional vulnerability, physical vulnerability, in a way that God can use to really help you become one with your spouse. Think about the impact that could have on our kids if we begin to paint that kind of picture for them. Did anybody in this room have that painted for them as a kid? Not one. Not a single hand in the room. Me neither. We're supposed to just come up with that stuff on our own at some point. Why not instead paint that picture for our kiddos? Start to cast some real vision for them. And try to get that towards 1/4 of the conversation. So we'll get into some practical do's and don'ts here. I'm going to pull the whole list up and then we'll go through them. Do frame this with your kiddos from the beginning as an ongoing conversation. Set an expectation with your kids that says, hey, we are going to talk about this on a fairly regular basis, and so know that this conversation is the beginning of a series of conversations. The second is, do use real anatomy words. I had a tendency as a counselor to be a particularly mean counselor in that I would send parents home and have them look in the mirror and practice saying the words penis and vagina until they could say it in front of another human being, which is a really hard thing to do, right? Why are we so scared of using those words? Guesses. Why is it hard? That's right. And why didn't we use them when we were younger? Shame, because sex was bad, right? Nobody calls their foot their foo-foo, right? You don't call your thumb your tummy or your tummo. No. Do you know the connotation we're giving our kids when we make up words for their body parts that God gave them? We're saying this is bad. This is dirty. You shouldn't talk about it. Guys, there is a difference between privacy and shame. And we have blurred those lines because it makes us feel less vulnerable. Does that make sense? When my son was three, he's six now, when he was three, there's this really awesome trail behind our house along a creek. And we were walking one day and came across another fellowship family that we didn't know very well, but we stopped and we're chatting with them, trying to get to know them. And we're sitting there and Beck's in the stroller and all of a sudden he goes, and immediately I was like, oh no, I know exactly what's coming right now. And I tried to ignore it for a second, and 5 seconds later he goes, Dad, my penis is tall. And I was like, oh gosh. I said, this is our son. We teach anatomically correct words at our house. But then I thought about it as we walked off. And I said, how great is that? No shame. No shame. He lives with his body as an innocent three-year-old in a way that Satan, sin, hasn't gotten to. And he has no shame. That's where we've got to move towards. That's why we use real words. We're not trying to be dogmatic. We're not trying to be ridiculous. It's about no shame. That couple was stunned. We don't hang out with them a whole lot. It's okay. If they listen to the podcast, I still think you guys are great. Do use self-disclosure. Find, like we talked about earlier, find a piece of your story you can share. It's so powerful. Do pray during these conversations. Anybody in the room pray for the future spouse of their kiddos? Yeah, me too. What if you prayed with your 15-year-old for their future sex life? What if you prayed with them that you wanted them to experience a rich and healthy and happy sex life with their spouse in the future. That it would be something that breeds connectedness. That it would be something that helps them be a part of the 49% of the church that's able to keep the marriage together. What if it's something that could be a life-breathing thing in their future marriage? And that some of the pain that we all in this room have felt, they wouldn't have to feel. Because we prayed to the Almighty God and with our child for them to have a healthy sex life. Could be incredibly powerful. Do use third-person language. Ask your kids what their friends are saying, talking about sex. A great way with your kiddos who are really reserved and don't want to get into these conversations to begin to get some traction is to make it about their friends, right? In counseling, if I ask a 15-year-old boy how often he views pornography, never. I don't do that. How often do your friends? Oh, 2 times a week. Okay. Because it's not about me now, right? So we can invite our kids into that space. And we can have them be a part of the conversation by saying, hey, what's going on with your friend's life? It's a little less vulnerable. If you do that, and then you practice a little bit of self-disclosure, you're setting a pretty good table for your kids to enter into the kind of conversations that most parents want to have, but find it really hard to have. Do favor same-gender conversations when possible. If mom can talk to daughter, if dad can talk to son, that's best case. It's not always possible, and if it's not, who cares? But if it is possible, go for it. Use those same genders. They can be really helpful. They can come from a place of understanding that can be really productive and really powerful. I'll pause right there to say this. If you're a parent of a kiddo, that means that the Lord God wanted you to have them. So whoever you are, he has equipped you to engage with them where you're at. If you're a single mom and you've got boys, get after it. God has equipped you. He will walk with you. It will be hard. It will be uncomfortable, but he'll walk forward with you. So don't take a piece of advice like that is optimal and let it exclude you, because there's no truth in that. Don't try to check a box on this one. If you're a box checker, put your pencil down. This is a series of conversations. You do not get to teach your kids about birds and bees one time and then move forward. This is an ongoing conversation where we're going to try to sow some deep, powerful seeds with our kiddos. Don't run if it gets really awkward. If it gets really awkward with your kiddos, there is a really good chance you're close to something really important and really powerful. So hang in there. Push yourself. My sweet wife with our little one a few months ago, he started asking some baby questions and she was hanging in there and she was, well, you know, we talk about penis and vagina. It's about that, buddy. And there's things when you're old enough that will kind of help you understand what all that means and know that those are conversations that are coming. And he kept pressing. Well, yeah, but mom, how does it happen? Well, the baby's in the mama's tummy. No, before that, mama, where does the baby come from? How does it get in her tummy? Just ask your dad when he gets home. I don't blame her. I probably would have too. I would have been stuck. It's fine. But try to hang in there when it gets awkward. Try not to run. You might be close to something really powerful and really good. Don't have this conversation in front of your other kids. Have it one-to-one whenever possible. In the first service, we had a mom with a set of twins. She said they're never apart. I said, send the other one to her room. Take this one to your room. If we can get our kids one-on-one, it's way more productive and it helps avoid shame. Don't make lots of jokes. This one's going to be tough for me. I'm going to have to guard myself here because I like to engage my kiddos that way. But if I do it with my sweet Olive, who's 4, she may just crumble, and I may contribute to shame in her sexual narrative. And so I got to put it on the shelf and be straightforward with her. Don't treat this as one size fits all. You've got to understand. Every question that I got in the first service, afterwards, I feel like I had to answer with, well, you've got to know your own kiddo first. And I hate to start with that, but it's so important. These conversations are not one size fits all. You're going to have multiple kids in your house, some who are way more sexually curious than others. Those conversations are going to be different than the kid who's not sexually curious. Because those conversations might be about them becoming too hyperactive in sexual topics, right? Where your sexually avoidant kiddo, the conversation may be about, hey, sex can be good, and you need to know that the goal is not to avoid that for your whole life. And so you've got to treat this not as a one-size-fits-all. Don't focus solely on the season of, on this season of life that your kiddos are in. We're painting a much bigger picture than that. And don't let anything on this list keep you from getting started. If we can get ourselves as parents to the table and begin to start having these conversations with our kiddos, and then begin to find lanes, to find pieces that we can self-disclose and ask questions about their kids, we can enter into these conversations. And the Lord is ready and willing to use that, to use you to accomplish some of these goals. But before we start any of that, I want to cover one other really important piece. And I call it the authentic parenting dilemma. And it's something that every single one of us as parents face. Many times as a counselor, I sat with a parent who loves Jesus deeply, wants great things for their kiddos, but the words that are coming out of their mouth do not match the life experience that their kids sit with every day. My kiddos are totally different. We don't know the one-year-old's personality that well yet, but our four-year-old Olive, she is expressive. She is artistic. There is no truth in this world. It is all a blank canvas that she gets to create on. And our six-year-old Beck is like the most literal kid in the world. He just, everything is black and white. There is no gray. It is right. It is wrong. Beck struggles with anger in his life. I know exactly where Beck got that from because I struggled deeply with anger in his life. And so when he, or anger in my life. So when he pops off and blows up, I don't look at him and go, you've got to quit doing that. You can't be angry. What are you doing? I look at him and I go, buddy, me too. Me too. You've seen me do it. When I lose my temper and I lose control, me and you've got to work on that. What can we do together to begin to work on being less angry? Because if my narrative to him is don't be angry, and then he watches me go be angry, paradoxical impact every single time. It will make him more angry. It's undeniable in the way that God designed human behavior. And so the authentic parenting dilemma is that if our life does not match our words will not land on the hearts of our children. Here's why this is important. If we've got shame or issues of sexuality in our own lives, we can't take our kiddos very far. And as much as you want for your kiddos, you're here today because you love your kids a ton and you want them to live in a sexually healthy, to live a sexually healthy life. And as much as you want that, the God of the universe wants it even more so for you. He is so ready for whatever is in your heart and in your life for you to find freedom from. Freedom from infidelity recovery, freedom from pornography, freedom from masturbation, freedom from sexual avoidance, freedom from the wounds and the hurts that are on your heart from somebody else's sin in your life. And he is ready for you to work on that. And if you want your kids to enter into this series of sexual conversations with you so that they can become sexually healthy people, we've got to be willing to work on our own stuff. It won't work otherwise. We think we can hide so much from our kids. We can't. We can't hide it from them. They're so unbelievably perceptive. Mom and dad are having trouble. They know it. Somebody got laid off from a job and we're trying to protect our kids from that fear. They know it. They may not know exactly what, but they know. And if you're trying to talk to them about sex, and you've got huge stuff in your life that you've never grappled with or need to grapple some more with, they're going to know it. And it's going to limit your impact with them. In Northwest Arkansas, we're fortunate to have some really great resources that we can use. There's some great counseling centers. The Joshua Center in Rogers and Fayetteville is a great place. Oaks Counseling that I used to work with in Springdale is a wonderful place. Waterstone Counseling in Springdale specializes in sexual addiction and sexual sin. The JBU Care Clinic system, the care system here at Fellowship. We've got great resources for your kiddos and for adults that we can use if we need to begin to grapple with that stuff in our own life. We used to have a saying in counseling that you can't take your clients farther than you're willing to go yourself. And it was something that one of my professors used to push me really hard on. Ben, if you've got stuff in your life, you better either work on it or not take that type of client because it's not fair to them. We should feel the same challenge as parents, right? We don't have any right to ask our kids to be sexually healthy if we're not willing to fight for it ourselves. And this stuff's hard, guys. Like, I'm not pretending like it should be easy. But we've got to be willing to push ourselves if we're wanting to push our kiddos. Start working on your own stuff today. The God of the universe loves you and wants you to be sexually healthy. So, I asked for Hunter's permission to do that part too. So if you're mad, you can talk to him. I like to push stuff on him. I want to do one more, just real brief activity, and then we'll do a little bit of Q&A time. Just turn back to the same person you talked to earlier and try to come up with one frame where you can begin a sexual conversation in your home with your kiddos in the next week or two. What could you take? Is it a piece of self-disclosure? Is it asking about their friends? Is it praying with them about their future sex life? What is a piece that you could take that you could begin to talk to your kiddos about in the next week or two?